In a world where 85% of employees feel disengaged at work, Gary Hamel and Michelle Zannini offer a revolutionary alternative to soul-crushing bureaucracy. Humocracy has been hailed as a management masterpiece by luminaries including Nobel laureate Bengt Holmstrom and best-selling authors Daniel Pink and Adam Grant. The book has become required reading for forward-thinking executives worldwide, with Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff calling it a must-read manifesto for creating organizations that truly value humans. What makes this work particularly powerful is its practical roadmap for building organizations that liberate human potential rather than stifling it. As we face unprecedented global challenges requiring maximum creativity and adaptability, Hamel and Zannini's vision couldn't be more timely, showing us how to create workplaces where people can truly flourish rather than merely function. We live in an age of accelerating change, where computational power and network capacity have grown exponentially. Yet most organizations aren't changing as fast as the world around them. Contrary to conventional wisdom, humans aren't resistant to change. We're change addicts who constantly reinvent our personal lives. It's our organizations that are terrible at adaptation. The evidence is everywhere. Despite their human capacity for resilience, creativity, and passion, our organizations tend to be inertial, incremental, and uninspiring. Even tech giants like Intel and Microsoft have missed major opportunities like the mobile revolution. Companies that fall behind tend to stay there. General Motors has lost market share in all but 5 years since 1990, surviving only through government bailout. Since 2020, 124 veteran S&P 500 companies delivered top quartile returns in just 1 year out of 10, producing less than half the returns of their more successful peers. Innovation statistics tell a similar story. While 79% of CEOs rate innovation a top priority, 94% express disappointment with their innovation performance. This disconnect exists despite human creativity flourishing everywhere else, from 700,000 hours of daily YouTube uploads to millions of new blogs, photos, and apps created daily. Scientific innovation is accelerating too, with U.S. patent grants growing 400% since 1985. Yet established organizations generally fail at game-changing innovation, with most companies on most innovative lists being young digital natives. Perhaps most troubling is the engagement deficit. A 2018 Gallup study found only one-third of U.S. employees fully engaged in their work, with 53% not engaged and 13% actively disengaged. Globally, the situation is worse. 15% engaged, 67% disengaged, and 18% actively disengaged. This matters because winning in the creative economy requires more than basic capabilities like obedience and diligence. Organizations need employees with initiative, creativity, and daring that emerge only from passion. The common thread underlying these organizational failures is bureaucracy. With its formal hierarchy, position-based power, top-down authority, centralized decision-making, tight job definitions, and rank-based compensation. These seemingly innocuous features are the roots of institutional incompetence. As Max Weber noted, bureaucracy develops more perfectly as it becomes dehumanized, eliminating personal, irrational, and emotional elements that escape calculation. The very goal of bureaucracy was to turn humans into semi-programmable robots. Bureaucracy persists despite universal condemnation from business leaders like Walmart's Doug McMillon, villain, J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon, disease, and Berkshire Hathaway's Charles Munger, cancer. Since 1983, the number of managers and administrators in the U.S. workforce has more than doubled, while all other occupations grew by only 44%. The bureaucratic class in America comprises 26.9 million managers and administrative support staff, 18.4% of the workforce, claiming over $3.2 trillion in compensation annually, nearly a third of America's total wage bill. Add to this the cost of bureaucratic busy work created for everyone else. Non-managerial employees spend roughly 16% of their time complying with internal rules and regulations, equivalent to another 19 million full-time bureaucrats. Post-bureaucratic pioneers like Bertzorg, Heyer, and Nucor demonstrate that large organizations can operate with super-flat structures. GE's Durham plant achieves twice the productivity of conventionally managed facilities with a remarkable 1/300 span of control. If we could reduce managers and administrators by half and cut bureaucratic busy work by 50%, we'd save $2.6 trillion annually in the U.S. alone, far exceeding the $1.3 trillion in net income of all Russell 3000 companies combined. Beyond these direct costs, bureaucracy systematically undermines organizational vitality. It grants excessive credence to precedent-bound leaders, discourages rebellious thinking, creates long lags between sensing and responding, calcifies organizational structures, blinds silo-dwelling leaders to opportunities, sub-optimizes trade-offs, frustrates resource redeployment, discourages risk-taking, politicizes decision-making, creates tortuous approval pathways, misaligns power and capability, caps individual contribution, undermines frontline accountability, and systematically devalues originality. Nucor challenges the notion that steelworkers are merely physical laborers. At the Blytheville facility, crew members, not executives, conducted cost-benefit analysis, decided to replace an aging furnace shell, and designed it themselves, saving 90% compared to supplier bids. This bottom-up approach has made Nucor America's steel leader with 26,000 employees shipping 27.9 million tons of steel annually. Despite steelmaking's challenging economics, Nucor has remained profitable for decades except for 1 year following the 2008 crisis, consistently outperforming peers in profitability, growth, and productivity. Nucor operates as a confederation of 75 largely autonomous divisions, averaging $330 million in annual revenue. Unlike traditional steel companies, each division functions as an end-to-end business, making its own decisions on procurement, products, and staffing, while maintaining responsibility for creating demand and retaining customers. Nucor maintains a minuscule corporate center of just 100 people, compared to U.S. Steel's 1,000-person headquarters, keeping administrative expenses at half their competitors' levels. Nucor's compensation system drives innovation by linking team earnings directly to productivity. While base pay sits at 75% of industry average, teams earn substantial bonuses once output exceeds 80% of rated capacity. Since bonus thresholds remain fixed unless capital investments increase rated capacity, teams are incentivized to sweat the assets through creative problem-solving. Bonuses are team-based rather than individual, encouraging collaborative innovation across interdependent processes. Unlike most companies, Nucor invests in building business acumen among frontline workers through simulations like Dollars and Tons, where teams learn to run a fictional division. Every teammate has a personal development plan outlining 5 to 10 year career goals, reflecting Nucor's commitment to treating workers as valuable long-term assets rather than expendable resources. Remarkably, Nucor has never laid off employees at its steel mills despite industry-wide job cuts of 40% between 2000 and 2018. During downturns, the company reduces work weeks rather than workforces. Even when closing plants, employees are offered positions elsewhere. This commitment to job security means teams eagerly embrace automation, knowing smart machines won't replace them. Nucor's production crews are extraordinarily empowered compared to competitors. Teams lead in setting targets, allocating tasks, meeting standards, and solving problems, with decisions that can impact hundreds of thousands of dollars. Production teams manage their own attendance and shift planning without seeking management permission. They have unprecedented financial autonomy, regularly issuing purchase orders worth tens of thousands of dollars without consulting plant management. As they say at Nucor, we don't build steel, we build people. In an era where startups have disrupted nearly every industry, consultants typically advise established companies to sequester innovation in purpose-built accelerators. Yet these rarely generate enough returns to offset declining legacy businesses. What's seldom considered is transforming the entire company into an entrepreneurial platform, precisely what Haier, the world's largest appliance maker, has accomplished. Based in Qingdao, China, Haier competes with household names like Whirlpool, LG, and Electrolux. With revenues exceeding $38 billion annually, Haier has been thriving, growing gross profits by 22% and revenues by 20% annually over the past decade, while creating more than $2 billion in market value from new ventures. This performance outpaces all competitors, driven by CEO Zhang Ruimin's radical management overhaul focused on three objectives: turning every employee into an entrepreneur, creating zero distance between employees and users, and making the company a power node in an expanding ecosystem. Haier has divided itself into more than 4,000 micro-enterprises, MEs, each with 10 to 15 employees. These come in three varieties: about 200 transforming MEs from Haier's legacy appliance business, 50-plus incubating MEs, homegrown startups, and roughly 3,800 node MEs that provide components and services to market-facing MEs. This structure mimics the Internet's architecture, diverse units held together by common standards that allow them to share resources while evolving independently. Unlike traditional companies that set modest incremental goals, every Haier microenterprise pursues ambitious leading targets set from the outside in. Transforming MEs must grow revenue and profit 4 to 10 times faster than industry averages. The Community Laundry ME exemplifies this approach, evolving from providing washing machines on college campuses to hosting a platform with millions of users and multiple service vendors. At Haier, every ME freely contracts with other MEs or external vendors with minimal executive interference. A typical user ME contracts with a dozen or more nodes, negotiating agreements based on its performance objectives. Service requests typically attract multiple proposals, with discussions challenging existing practices. Nodes that fail to provide competitive service can go out of business, and a substantial part of their revenue depends on their ME customers' success. Haier replicates startup dynamics by giving ME teams three formal rights: strategic freedom to pursue opportunities and form partnerships, people decisions, including hiring and defining roles, and distribution control over pay rates and bonuses. With these rights comes accountability through weekly, monthly, and quarterly goals. Compensation follows three performance thresholds that can multiply base salaries many times over. Poor performance triggers leadership changes. 3 months of missed targets forces an election, while 2/3 of team members can vote out underperforming leaders. In startups, people stretch themselves, take risks, and feel deeply connected to customers. Successful startups share key characteristics: passionate employees united by groundbreaking goals, small teams with flexible roles, few management levels, ambitious timelines that force creativity, openness to outside resources, informal communication, and a culture that prizes initiative. Unfortunately, entrepreneurship is declining. Over 4 decades, the percentage of new companies in the U.S. economy has dropped by nearly half, while consolidation has created dominant oligopolies. This trend threatens innovation, productivity growth, and consumer choice. Few established companies offer what recruits crave most: autonomy and upside. Studies show these factors positively impact performance. Dutch researchers found empowerment was most highly correlated with engagement, job satisfaction, and organizational commitment, while accountability most impacted job performance. Another study revealed that autonomy and upside in combination reduce turnover by more than half. Individually, they have little impact. Despite this evidence, most employees remain locked in rigid wage scales with minimal incentives. Only 14-15% of non-managers receive performance bonuses. Median payouts are just 4.7% of pay, and profit-sharing schemes account for only 2.1% of total compensation. This reflects leaders' belief that frontline staff have little to contribute, a prejudice as stifling as 18th-century aristocratic hauteur. Companies like Hire and Nucor demonstrate the power of creating ownership cultures. At Hire, micro-enterprise team members with modest base pay can multiply their earnings 5-10x by achieving targets while enjoying freedom to set direction, develop products, define roles, and hire colleagues. Nucor's bonus system drives relentless productivity improvement, yielding 3 times the per capita profit of peers. By refusing to treat employees like commodities, Nucor has decommoditized its business. Markets consistently outperform hierarchies by aggregating diverse information into reliable estimates of value, yet most companies operate like command economies with highly concentrated decision-making power. This creates an ignorance tax when senior leaders fail to consult broader perspectives before making important decisions. Markets outperform hierarchies at allocating resources because funding decisions are distributed, dispassionate, and dynamic. Over 50 years, the New York Stock Exchange as a whole has outperformed each constituent company because ordinary investors collectively made smarter decisions than CEOs. Bureaucratic resource allocation suffers from numerous biases. Territorial leaders reluctant to share resources, large units getting disproportionate capital due to political clout, overinvestment in struggling businesses, across-the-board cuts during shortages, well-connected leaders winning more resources regardless of merit, executives favoring businesses from their past, inflated investment proposals, and incremental budgeting that maintains the status quo. IBM has countered these tendencies by creating internal markets like iFundit, where employees invest virtual currency in promising ideas. Their Cognitive Build initiative invited 275,000 employees to submit AI exploitation ideas, resulting in 8,361 proposals that were narrowed to 2,603 after technical review. Over 225,000 employees invested $291 million in fantasy cash, helping identify the most promising concepts. In market economies, customer sovereignty forces companies to continuously innovate. Yet inside organizations, monopolistic internal functions like HR, IT, and finance face little competitive pressure. They wield immense power with few checks and balances, often prioritizing compliance over customer service. Operating units frequently complain about slow IT upgrades, inflexible HR policies, and bureaucratic procurement rules. These monopolies persist because staffers are accountable to their bosses, not their internal customers. The triumph of meritocracy as a social ideal marked a revolutionary turning point in human history. Before the Enlightenment, societies were rigidly stratified, with most people having little hope of advancement. Today, we broadly accept meritocracy's value, even as we work to make it more accessible to all. Yet bureaucracy systematically undermines meritocracy, despite being designed to overcome nepotism and class consciousness. Most people overestimate their abilities. 84% of middle managers and 97% of executives claim to be in the top 10% of performers. This self-delusion thrives in hierarchies because confident people gain advantage in power competitions regardless of actual competence. Power asymmetry makes questioning a superior's competence career-limiting, and executives often believe they alone should handle big issues. We're also terrible at judging others' competence. In-group bias leads us to favor those similar to ourselves, a tendency so deep that 11-month-old babies prefer puppets sharing their snack preferences. The halo effect compounds this problem, as first impressions resist change even when contradicted by evidence. Most damaging is that judgments typically depend on a single assessor, the boss. Studies show 75% of executives have witnessed favoritism in hiring, and there's zero correlation between performance ratings and actual business results. Google reduces managerial bias through multi-perspective evaluation. Candidates for leadership positions face at least 4 interviewers, including peers and direct reports. Promotions come from cross-unit groups, relying heavily on peer and subordinate feedback, while performance reviews incorporate colleague ratings that are calibrated across teams. Bridgewater Associates takes this further with its Dot Collector app, where employees continuously rate each other across 100-plus attributes. With thousands of data points per person annually, these transparent competence profiles provide objective evidence for staffing decisions. Bridgewater's believability-weighted decision-making ensures decisions reflect collective wisdom rather than individual authority. As founder Ray Dalio explains, this eliminates one of the greatest tragedies of mankind, people arrogantly holding wrong opinions without testing them. Humans are fundamentally wired for community. Those moments when we accomplish meaningful work with people we care about, feeling inspired, supported, and appreciated. Our brains evolved for social interaction, and studies show that strong social connections have the risk of premature death compared to isolation. Southwest Airlines proves community can thrive at scale, with 58,000 employees maintaining profitability for 46 consecutive years. Despite generating half the industry's net income while representing just 6% of revenues, Southwest leads in efficiency metrics like revenue per employee and passenger seat miles per employee. Their true advantage isn't their business model, but their people model. As founder Herb Kelleher put it, "The core of our success, that's the most difficult thing for a competitor to imitate. They can't buy dedication, devotion, loyalty, the feeling that you are participating in a crusade." Southwest's community spirit enables remarkable operational efficiency. With 83% unionized employees but no strikes, they achieve industry-leading 35-minute turnarounds with half the gate crew size of competitors. Their collaborative approach means employees swarm problems together, pilots picking up trash, mechanics handling baggage, with everyone sharing responsibility for on-time departures. Southwest achieves 53 flight hours per employee annually, 50% more than their nearest rival, while maintaining high customer satisfaction. Southwest's community is united by a meaningful purpose: democratizing air travel. New employees attend Now Onboarding Orientation, where they learn the company's origin story and values of warrior spirit, fun-loving attitude, and servant's heart. Unlike most companies with mere mission statements, Southwest employees genuinely believe they're on a mission. Southwest fosters authentic community through transparent communication and psychological safety that encourages authenticity. Herb Kelleher modeled this by never taking himself too seriously, wearing Hawaiian shirts to meetings, donning outlandish costumes at company events, and settling a legal dispute with an arm wrestling contest. This permission to be authentic extends to forgiveness. As former President Colleen Barrett explained, "We are very tolerant and forgiving when people make an honest mistake." Institutions and societies thrive through openness and diversity. Cities like New York and London, with their linguistic and cultural diversity, create vast combinatorial spaces for mixing ideas, talents, and resources. Similarly, leading universities have remained resilient for centuries by attracting brilliant minds who seek out other brilliant minds. As Thomas Kuhn observed, all significant breakthroughs are break-withs old ways of thinking, yet we remain prisoners of our paradigms. Denial tops the list of reasons we get stuck in our thinking, as demonstrated by a Comcast executive who in 2016 dismissed YouTube as basically a sidebar and claimed Netflix's programming wasn't consistent enough to affect us in a meaningful way, despite both streaming services growing exponentially. Enlightenment isn't the product of a remarkable brain, but of remarkable experiences. Steve Jobs credited his calligraphy class with influencing the Macintosh's design a decade later. Four perceptual habits can illuminate new opportunities: challenging unexamined assumptions, being alert to what's changing, repurposing skills and assets, and unearthing unmet needs. Newcomers often innovate because they're not constrained by industry experience. The challenge is distinguishing between immutable laws and mere dogma. Start by spotting similarities in competitor strategies and questioning the shared assumptions. Focus on what hasn't changed in your industry for years. Ask what would happen if you aimed for a 10x improvement in some parameter. Airbnb challenged the belief that innkeepers needed to own rooms. Tesla bypassed traditional car dealerships, and Aravind Eye Care System performs 500,000 cataract surgeries annually at 5% of Western costs by applying McDonald's principles to healthcare. When CEOs claim they alone are responsible for strategy, that's a problem. With game-changing business ideas being rare, breakthrough strategy depends on generating thousands of novel ideas, not just tens from the executive team. Strategy making should be a company-wide conversation open to employees, customers, and partners. While messier than top-down approaches, open strategy produces more radical ideas, heightens commitment, builds credibility, provides greater granularity, speeds implementation, and reduces organizational inertia. Experimentation is the engine of evolution, both in nature and in organizations. While humans are products of 4 billion years of evolutionary experimentation, most employers provide little encouragement for workers to learn by doing. In bureaucracies, experimentation is typically limited to specialists, with 61% of large company employees reporting it's very difficult to try new things. Bureaucracies prioritize reliability over prototyping, seeing experiments as risky rather than essential. This risk aversion paradoxically increases danger. Incrementalism becomes the riskiest strategy in an age of upheaval. Ross Ashby's Law of Requisite Variety states that for a system to remain viable, it must generate responses as diverse as the challenges in its environment. Only variety can absorb variety. Innovation, like nature, is a numbers game. Just as oak trees drop thousands of acorns with few germinating, venture capitalists review thousands of business plans before investing in a handful of startups, knowing 70% will fail. While most organizations evaluate each experiment on its individual merits, they fail to distinguish between project risk and portfolio risk. The most important freedom an organization can grant employees is the freedom to fail. Amazon exemplifies experimentation culture with breakthroughs like Amazon Marketplace, Kindle, AWS, Alexa, and Amazon Go emerging from relentless bottom-up experimentation. As Jeff Bezos says, our success is a function of how many experiments we do per year, per month, per week, per day. When employee Greg Linden created a recommendation engine despite an executive's objections, he tested it anyway, discovering what now generates 35% of Amazon's retail sales. Linden's lesson: everyone must be able to experiment, learn, and iterate. Position, obedience, and tradition should hold no power. For innovation to flourish, measurement must rule. Intuit transformed itself into an experimentation powerhouse under founder Scott Cook's directive. No more decision by PowerPoint, persuasion, position, or power. Instead, decision by experiment became the rule. This approach yielded innovations like SnapTax, which began when product manager Carol Howe wondered if smartphones could simplify tax preparation. After just 6 months of rapid prototyping and testing, SnapTax launched and quickly became the number one app in the iTunes store. Michelin's journey toward responsabilization demonstrates how to begin transforming a bureaucracy without CEO-led revolution or existential crisis. The initiative, which delivered $500 million in manufacturing improvements by 2020, began in 2013 when Bertrand Ballerin convinced frontline supervisors to experiment with decentralization. The transformation was born from frustration with the Michelin Manufacturing Way, MMW, a mid-2000s standardization program that improved productivity but seemed to crowd out local initiative. By 2010, the standardization efforts were yielding diminishing returns while market pressures demanded greater creativity and flexibility. Ballerin recruited 38 teams from 17 plants, encompassing 1,500 employees. He held kickoff meetings at each plant, encouraging managers to let teams discover their own solutions and shift from deciding to enabling. The tipping point came when teams realized no one would stop them from taking initiative. In Lipuy, team leader Duplant discovered his team didn't understand his role, nor he theirs. After shadowing each other, the team took over scheduling shifts and production planning with remarkable success. In Hamburg, a team struggling with workflow issues solved persistent production problems by establishing direct communication with their downstream assembly team, reducing downtime from 2 hours daily to zero. Both teams gradually expanded their self-management capabilities, proving that local coordination was more effective than central planning. The results were remarkable. Hamburg reduced defects from 7% to 1.5%, while increasing productivity by 10% and virtually eliminating absenteeism. Other plants reported similar gains. Olstensen cut defect rates by 50%, and Zalau reduced new operator training time from 5 days to 3. Employee engagement soared as team members felt like they were running their own businesses for the first time. Most people quietly endure bureaucracy's burden, resigned to structures and processes that hinder speed, initiative, and creativity. This collective acceptance stems from a misconception that we lack the power to reinvent our organizations. We've accepted the fiction that only those at the top can change management structures and systems. But waiting for bureaucrats to dismantle bureaucracy is futile. To unlearn bureaucratic habits requires honest self-assessment. Try reflecting on your recent actions by asking searching questions. Did I undermine rivals, hold on to power, pad budgets, fake enthusiasm for my boss's ideas, disregard human costs, play it safe, fail to challenge counterproductive policies, neglect others' growth, miss innovation opportunities, favor my team at the organization's expense? Deflect blame or claim undue credit. Sacrifice values for expediency. The pursuit of humocracy requires sacrifice. As Mary Parker Follett noted, true leadership increases the sense of power among those being led rather than exercising power over them. This servant leadership ethos drives organizations like Higher, Southwest Airlines, and Nucor, where managers view their positions as the least noble job. Bureaucracy can't be demolished with a wrecking ball. It must be dismantled brick by brick through experimentation. Building humocracy requires a revolutionary yet evolutionary approach that's radical in aspiration but pragmatic in execution. Like complex systems in nature, post-bureaucratic organizations must be assembled bottom-up through trial and error, not designed top-down by consultants. Organizations worldwide are disabled by bureaucracy, inertial, incremental, and inhuman. This harms everyone, not just CEOs. Ponderous institutions misuse resources, reduce productivity, squander imagination, suppress initiative, and bungle the future. But employees pay the highest price, as the bureaucratic caste system deprives them of chances to acquire skills, exercise ingenuity, and enlarge their impact. We can do better. By embracing humocracy's principles and practices, we can build organizations as resilient, creative, and passionate as the people within them. This will eliminate bureaucratic inefficiencies, unleash innovation, help organizations outrun change, and most importantly, turn every job into a good job.